Prayer for all the practice and work to go into that to do a wonderful addition to our service today. So thank you all for those beautiful words and a beautiful music. Well, happy first day of Unleavened Bread, everyone. Nice to be here with you. We have our new overflow upstairs. I can actually see who's sitting upstairs. It's a new experience if you've been here before. So welcome. Glad you're here with us. Welcome to any guests we have joining us as well. And to those on the webcast, I hope you're having a good holy day, wherever you are. Now, if you're like me, I still feel a little bit full from last night. We had a wonderful night to be much observed last evening, and I hope you did as well to begin the holy day. I'm going to just jump on in here. You know, Albert Einstein's quoted as saying, "Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result." Now, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Now, as we come into these holy days, days of unleavened bread, one main theme is change. The things are supposed to change and be different. There's the analogies of becoming new, becoming different, becoming unleavened. Not doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, but doing things differently, becoming something new. But change is hard for humans. We like what we like. We're creatures of habit. Maybe you came in today and somebody was sitting in the seat you usually sit in, and we can freak out, right? Change is hard. Even little things of, I'm not sitting where I usually sit. I don't know what to do. And it affects some people more than others. But the reality is, change is hard because it takes energy, both physically, mentally, emotionally. Change takes accepting that we want something different and then being willing to put the work in to make it different, to do something about it. You know, here in the United States, every January, tons of people make New Year's resolutions, saying this year is going to be different. But it's so common for it to stop within weeks that the second Friday in January has been dubbed Quitter's Day. Right, the second Friday, so not very far along in January, people have called it Quitter's Day because most or many people quit their New Year's resolutions so quickly. Again, because change is hard. No, based on a study, they said only 6 people stick with their New Year's resolution by the end of that first year. Within a year, only 6% are still doing what they said they wanted to be different. And we tend to think change is going to be quick, we're going to see big results quick, it's going to be fast, instant. And yet when change comes slow and small, we can get discouraged. When it's not fast, we stop, we give up because, well, it's not as easy as we thought, it's not happening as fast. And so we have a tendency to stop. Now go with me as we think about this over to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Verse 7. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. Actually, I'm sorry. Go with me to 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 7. I'm sorry. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 7. First Corinthians 5 and verse 7. Paul here says, "Therefore purge out the old leaven, though you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." And so as Paul was given instructions of how to keep this holy day that we're at today, he uses these analogies of becoming unleavened ourselves, of becoming something new, a new creation, a new lump, starting over. But as we'll see today, change doesn't just go from saying, well, I was this yesterday, so I'm going to be a new, completely different lump today. But we wish it was that easy, but it's not. And so as we come through these days, how do we focus on changing, on becoming this new lump that God calls us to? Because while there's events that are important within this, we see that it's a lifelong process that's important. I realized where I wanted to go actually was 2 Corinthians as well. I wanted to go to both of these. Go with me back to 2 Corinthians 5, but verse 17, not 7. That's where I messed up. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 17. Again, 2 Corinthians 5, 17. It says, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away, and behold, all things have become new." So if we see there in 1 Corinthians 5, 7, and then here in 2 Corinthians 5, 17, he keeps using this reality that God expects us to change, to be new, to be different. He doesn't call us to stay where we are, to be what we were, but to be new, to be different. And so how do we do that? How do we make changes that last? We won't burn out. We won't, 2 Fridays from now, show up in Quitter's Day, right? 2 weeks after Unleavened Bread, I'm done with the changes that I set out as we come to these days. How do we do this? Today, I just want to look at 4 points to help us in this process of change, of how to become this new creation, this new lump that God has called us to. Now, I do want one quick caveat. As I say this, nothing I say today changes the fact that God expects us to get rid of sin. Right? I'm going to talk about how it's a slow, hard process, and it's gradual. None of that defeats the reality that God says, you know, if you're sinning, these things need to change. But this is kind of what that process looks like. Because it's not as easy, it's not as quick or straightforward as we sometimes like. And we'll see the example of Israel today, that God took them out of Egypt. We think, okay, new life for them. It's going to be different. We'll see instantly it wasn't all that different. There was a long process that God had to work with them. And we see that laid out through many of the Bible characters. We'll talk about some throughout today. That as God started working with them, calling them, it's a pretty long, gradual process. Think about people like Moses, who I feel like God sent into the wilderness for 40 years to say, we need to refine some things. Some things need to change before you're ready for what I need you to do. And people like David, who anointed king, and yet he didn't become king for quite a while. I think there was some refining God still had in mind for him, some change that had to take place. And we'll see that illustrated all through the Bible. And I use this as a reminder of that it should be an encouragement to us to not be upset when we stumble, not to be upset because it's not as quick as we think it should be, but to accept that it's a process. And we're all in different places along this journey as well. And that leads us right to point one. The first thing we need to do to recognize, to find changes that last, is to recognize that change is a process, not an event. Change is a process, not an event. We often think of change as an event or a specific time, and that we are going to do this, and I'm going to wake up tomorrow completely different. I'm going to work out today, and I'm going to wake up tomorrow healthy and fit. Right? But we know it doesn't work that way. That change is a process, not an event. Again, if we think about Israel, God leads them out of Egypt through these things we've rehearsed recently. And everything in their life started changing, right? No longer slaves, heading towards the promised land. God's promises being fulfilled. It's a pretty big event. But if you look at Israel, the people as a whole, you know, the change for them was pretty gradual in a lot of ways. When we think about it specifically in their spiritual lives, right, the change mentally for them took a long time. I think they stayed in Egypt for a long time. We'll get there in a moment. As they go to Mount Sinai, Moses disappears up the mountain. What do? They essentially revert back to just who they were in Egypt. They do exactly what they would have seen around them. Instead of being different, they were just like they were before. We think about baptism. Yeah, that baptism itself, that's a pretty important event. And yet it's just a piece of this big process that God calls us to. There's things going on before that event, and that's just a stepping stone to what God calls us to and to be. So as we think about that a little bit, go with me to Exodus 32, and you'll see kind of a little bit of what I'm talking about. Exodus 32 and verse 1. Again, Moses leads Israel out of Egypt. Right, the parting of the Red Sea, amazing miracles take place. You would think these people should have it. But then notice what happens quickly in verse 1 of Exodus 32. So Moses is up the mountain, and it says, "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that that should go before us. For as this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him.' So Aaron said to them, 'Break off the gold earrings which are on your ears and your wives and your sons and your daughters and bring them to me.' So the people broke off the golden earrings which are in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. And they said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" In verse 5, it says, "When Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, 'Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord.'" Now, Israel was out of Egypt, but this change clearly hadn't really taken effect. But in Egypt, they worshipped cows pretty often. And so what do? They revert back to what they knew, what was familiar. You know, this Moses guy's disappeared for a little too long. Let's make a god and worship it. It says they built an altar and feasted before it, sacrificed to this idol that they made. Israel was not really out of Egypt yet. Even though they'd technically been delivered, their change was going to be very slow. Now we read the book of Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, and you see how slow this was. 40 years of wandering, and they still really didn't get it. Right, there's these problems that we'll see keep popping up as we go through today. Now go with me a little bit further to Numbers chapter 14. Numbers 14. Fast forward in the story a little bit. God leads them to the promised land, wanting to fulfill these promises that he had for them. In verse 1 of Numbers 14. So we kind of jump in this story. They arrive at the promised land. They send the 12 spies, right? And Joshua and Caleb come back and say, "You know, this land is perfect. It's everything God said." And the other 10 spies agree. "Yeah, this place is beautiful. It's perfect." Except there's these other cities and people, and they are too big for us. Right? And Joshua and Caleb say, "No, we can take it. God's going to help us. Let's just do this." But notice what the people say. Chapter 14 and verse 1 of Numbers. "So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land?'" You know, the land that they literally just said is flowing with milk and honey. "Why has God brought us to this great land? To fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" So they said one to one another, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt." And change for Israel was hard. They literally wanted to go back to where they were slaves, where the Pharaoh was killing their children, because they said, "No, this is just too much. It's easier to go back to what we know. Change is too hard." It's a pretty hard reality to accept when they saw what God did, yet this is where they find themselves. Now, we skipped other stories of God providing food for them, God providing water, right? We skipped some amazing stories even in this. But these two, early on at Mount Sinai, here at the foot of the promised land, we see change wasn't really happening for Israel. Because the event of God leading them out wasn't enough for them to embrace the reality of what God was doing for them. Right? They really hadn't changed, even though their circumstances had changed. One last place I want to go to in this story before we kind of start leading up and and connecting to the next point. Exodus 23, once again, where we were before. Exodus 23. But this time, verse 27. Exodus 23 and verse 27. So right after God led them out of Egypt, he told them that he was going to lead them to this promised land, and he told them there's going to be people there that he was going to lead out, that he was going to help them along the way. This shouldn't have been a surprise to them when they show up and there's these other people in these cities. Because notice what he said in verse 27. I will send my fear before you. I will cause confusion among all the people to whom you come, and will make all your enemies turn their backs to you. And I will send hornets before you, which shall drive out the Hivites and the Canaanites and the Hittites from before you. So he said, there's going to be people, but I'm going to handle it. He told them that long before they arrived. And in verse 29, I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. Little by little, I will drive them out from before you until you've increased and you inherit the land. Find it interesting, as I was preparing this, I came to this point. God even says here to them, little by little, I'm going to do this. But he understands human nature because he made us. He said, I understand it's a slow process, that change comes slow. So little by little, I'm going to help you do this. Now, they rejected it, right? Which is why 40 years they spend in the wilderness. And then Joshua comes along and leads them in. And what does Joshua do? You know, God doesn't say in 1 year, one day, you just get it all, it's over. No, it is a slow process. Many years are taken as they conquer the promised land. But this kind of speaks to this first point, that change is a process. God was illustrating that to them here, that as you come to the promised land, it's going to be a process for you to take it. It's going to be a process for you to kind of get rid of this Egypt mindset and how they worshipped and all these things. God understood it was going to be a process for them and was working with them gradually so they wouldn't get overwhelmed, so they could handle it. And I think that's the reality of how God works with us today, right? He doesn't expect us in one day to go from who we were to this perfect image of Jesus Christ. He says this is a gradual, lifelong event of change. We use the word conversion, that it's a process. But when people start seeing change as an event, they get discouraged because that event doesn't lead it. Right? Moses could have said, what's wrong with you guys? We just crossed the Red Sea. We just got delivered from Egypt. Why don't you get it? It's the reality that this change in Israel was going to be a pretty long process. For their mindset to change, it was going to take a lot of time. You know, there's a book called Atomic Habits by James Clear. And he talks about this concept of the 1% rule. Because he recognizes that for humans, change is really hard. And he goes on to talk about if we would just focus on getting 1% better every day, think of the magnitude of the increase that that would bring in our life. But so he calls it this thing, this 1% rule. Instead of focusing on this gigantic event change, that I'm going to be so different tomorrow or next week or even next year. So today, just focus on being 1% better. And the next day, focus on being 1% better. Again, this doesn't diminish that we have to fight sin and change. That's not the point I'm making here. But the concept that we have to recognize that change is an event. That if we say, I want to become different, I want to stop fighting this sin because I've overcome it, but it's going to take time, even as we resist, even as we choose that to go against that sin. And so he uses this analogy of a 1% rule of just focus today, I'm going to do 1% better. Or I'm going to study 1% more than I did yesterday. I'm going to read 1% more. And the next day, read 1% more again. And as you add those things up, it accumulates. And so your increase starts compounding. And those little changes that you do, and maybe small habits, small details in your life, lead up to huge changes. You know, as I was thinking about this, it brought to mind, you know, when people shoot movies, like film movies, especially old movies, but they actually had picture books. Has anybody ever seen like a picture book or know what I'm talking about? I see some hands. So really to make a movie, I think about like old Disney movies especially, right? Of like, oh, I don't even know. Blanking on an old Disney movie now. See, if I don't write it down, this leaves my brain at some point. Robin Hood, that's when I was thinking of our kids, right? And there's the scene of all these animals marching, chasing Robin Hood and his friends. They're all animals. And they literally take images, right? They like write it down, draw, color it, and then they have one image. And then they show the very next little image. And then what they do, they just flip them so quickly that it looks like a movie, but it's really one image, then the next image, then the next image. You know, we call them frames now, right? Of how many frames are being cut and then put together so quickly that we can't see it. Our human mind just sees all the still images, makes it look like it's moving. Right, that's my 10-second synopsis of how movies work, and the little bit I understand. But it's really just stills that are moving so quickly that we don't see the still images, we see it moving. If we think about change that way with us, right, we're just working on the next image, and then we make that scene, and then the next image. We don't say, well, I need to get to the very last image and be this completely different thing. No, let me focus on the next image, and then the next image, and then the next one. And then you look back and you see all these images move quickly, and you see that movie play out, that change take place from one scene to the next. But that's what God calls us to do in this life. Now go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 1. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 1. Going back to this story of Moses and Israel, you know, Paul writes, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they all drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness." So Paul's recounting the story that we were just reading, and he reminds us of all these things God did. And as they crossed the Red Sea, it was a type of baptism. It was supposed to be that old life in Egypt was dead. They come out new and different, these people of God. He said, but guess what? It didn't happen. And so their bodies were scattered, he says, in the wilderness, because they rejected God. They rejected his offer to enter the promised land. And God said, so your kids will get to go. And God continued his plan, but with their kids, because they rejected it. But it's interesting, he said, I set all this up, and yet the change didn't take place, even as they saw what I was doing. With that thought, go down to verse 13. We'll kind of get to the end of the thought here, because he says, all that was for us to learn, an example for us. In verse 13, he says, and no temptation has overtaken you, such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. In the context of Moses and Israel in this journey, he said, God is faithful, though. God was going to fulfill his promise. And even the challenges that we face today, so they're not beyond what we can handle. That God knows our limitations. He knows we don't wake up tomorrow and that we have perfect faith, perfect character, that this is a process. God knows that. He knew that with Israel. He knows that with now. So he says God's faithful, and he's going to keep us where we can handle it, and he's going to help us. And when we need a way of escape, it says he's going to show us the way of escape so that we can bear these things. And I come here, kind of as we wrap up this first point, to be reminded that God understands the process we're in, this process of conversion. And he's with us and faithful in working through us, helping us, leading us. We have to put the work in. We have to keep doing this, right, seeking to get better every day. But it reminds us that God's faithful to be there with us and give us the way of escape when it becomes too much and gives us what we need to bear where he leads us. And that means as life goes on, we may get harder things because hopefully we've grown and overcome even stronger. But that God understands where we are and what we're doing. And so the first reality is that change is a process, not an event. One last illustration with this point I found interesting. As we think about this 1% rule, it's also the reality that being, you know, 1 degree off has pretty big changes. So I was doing some math, so maybe a little slightly off, but I was mapping if a ship left England, sailing, I guess they call it sailing still, even without sails. If a ship was going to Boston from England, I'll leave it there, that it's about 3,200 miles. Now, if they are 1 degree off in their navigation, which is pretty slight, right? If they think 1 degree off, they'd be 50 miles from Boston by the time they hit North America. 1 degree makes a pretty substantial difference. Now, if you're sailing, that's a problem, right? That's bad in the sense of if you're not going where you need to go, that can be bad. But it also shows the other perspective of 1 degree, 1% makes a big difference. That if we apply that to our life day after day, this process of change will take place. Now we have to stick with it. Recognize it's not instant. It's not just one event. Because it can get discouraging at times because change is slow. But God says stick with it. Keep going. Keep striving. Think of the analogies God uses of produce. Of you make these things. If you know much about produce and farming or plants and trees, it's a slow process. And he uses that phrase a lot with us, that we're supposed to produce these things. And by illustration, it means it's a slow change, a slow growth. And God accepts that as long as that's what we're seeking and working on. So I share that to keep us from being discouraged because of how slow change can be sometimes. Because we can think, well, why am I still fighting this sin or this challenge this holy days? Last year I had the plan I was going to get better at this. Now I'm not really that different. That can be discouraging and make us stop. Instead, I share this point to say, keep going. Because you probably are better than you were last year. Maybe not where you would want to be, but keep working on it. Keep seeking those 1% changes, heading in the right direction. And God's going to be with us. And that leads to the second point I want us to consider with change as well today. Is that change is a mindset. Change is a mindset. You know, Theodore Roosevelt was quoted as saying, do what you can with what you have with where you are. Do what you can with what you have with where you are. Because sometimes we can think, well, this is just too big, it's too hard. Or, you know, I was just born this way, so it is what it is. Or my dad was this way, so of course I'm going to be this way, so it is what it is. You know, mankind, we get this kind of stuck mindset sometimes. Well, I can't change. Or it's too big, too much beyond me. But the reality is, if we focus on what we can with what we have where we are, it changes us from a stuck mindset to a growth mindset. To say, I'm going to choose not to be stuck. I'm going to choose change. I'm going to focus on what I can do. And that's where it kind of goes back to that 1% principle that maybe that's doable right now. If I think of I'm going to completely change my whole life between today and tomorrow, that's overwhelming. That paralyzes us and makes us stop. But if we have a growth mindset and say, so I'm going to do this 1% today, then another 1% tomorrow, and then one the day after that, it allows us to change because it makes it manageable. And we have a mindset that says, I'm not stuck. I can overcome this. I can change this. That it's in my control. Because as humans, we sometimes think everything is out of our control. God says, no, you have a lot of control. Sometimes this is too hard to accept the change and the energy it takes. Go with me to Philippians for a moment. Philippians 4, verse 8. Philippians 4, and verse 8. I always think, so Paul is sitting in prison. This is one of the letters he wrote while he's sitting in prison, and notice his focus. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Now, he uses the phrase meditate on these things, but really he says have a mindset that's focused on this. Let this be where your focus is. I think Paul says this because there's a reality that where our mind is, where we focus, it's going to be most impactful to us. So if we focus on, well, this is too big, or this is too hard, or this is not sustainable, then that's where we're going to end up. Because we often will kind of speak things into existence. If I say I can't change this, then I'm probably right. But if I focus on these things, if I meditate on what God can do, what God says I can do through him, then I can change things because I trust this growth mindset, this mindset that says I can change things. I'm not stuck. My life doesn't have to be what it was. I'm not stuck. This isn't just who I am. I can never overcome this. I'm just this way. It's never going to change. God says, no, this isn't the truth, that you can change. Have a growth mindset instead of a stuck mindset. Because those things aren't true. We have a choice. God allows us to change those things, to break cycles, both individually and within families. But it takes a mindset that says this can happen. Now go with me to Matthew 6:33 as we think about this. Matthew 6:33. In the midst of the Sermon on the Mount, we have this famous quote or famous verse. Jesus says, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. So he's telling them in the context of this, we get context about not being worried about having enough food, having enough clothing, right? That's kind of the context of what he's speaking to. He says, God will provide all those things if you focus on what I tell you, where you're supposed to be. But what I find interesting, we're going to view it slightly different today. That word seek is pretty powerful. I think I've read this verse hundreds of times in my life. And I think, God says, just focus on his kingdom, his righteousness, and everything else will be okay. But that word seek really means a lot more than that. Means to seek out, to strive after, to go get. Really speaking to a mindset that says, I'm not just stuck where I am. I can seek something else out that's better. So don't feel like you're stuck where you are. Seek my kingdom, my righteousness. Go get it. Recognize that you're not stuck where you are. He says, go after this. Accept that you can change these things and that it can get better. That we're not stuck where we are. And within that process, right, we learn, we make mistakes, but a growth mindset lets us learn from them instead of getting discouraged. Lets us seek improvement to do better, little by little, instead of settling. So again, point two is that change is a mindset. The third thing for us to consider if we want lasting change is that change is never over. That can be hard in itself to accept, because that can sound demoralizing, but change is never over. It's a lifelong process. You must keep putting in the work, or you move backwards. It's a hard reality, but that's how God built everything around us. The natural state of the world is that it's in decay. In science, we use the word entropy, that every natural thing in nature, natural thing in nature, everything around us naturally heads towards entropy. Right? When I was in chemistry, that's how we would determine whether a natural event would take place or not. Right? You'd have this chemical reaction, and if it created or increased entropy, then you knew it would happen, what we call spontaneously or on its own. And if it didn't create more entropy, then that's something that wouldn't happen, right? You could mix two chemicals together. If there's not more entropy made from them reacting, nothing would happen. Because God made it where they only would react if it created more entropy, more disorder, more chaos. And there's lots of ways that happens, right? Usually it means bigger things are breaking down to smaller things, or energy is being released, or different ways. I'm trying not to get too scientific and put everyone to sleep too quickly. But the point is, every little reaction that goes on in the world around us is based on this concept of entropy. That God built it where things continue to break down and decay. The only way to go in the opposite is that energy has to be put in. I think the easy analogy with our kids is often, if you don't put work into cleaning your room, what happens? It becomes a disaster, right? Things don't just naturally go where they're supposed to. Your clothes don't get folded. Well, sometimes kids might think that because, you know, mom's putting my clothes away and they just show up. But the reality isn't that way, right? Somebody's adding energy into that system, is how we describe it in science, or it becomes more messy, more cluttered. But if you don't do the maintenance on your house, things break. Things get dirty. Things break down. And so energy has to be keep putting in or things get worse. But if you don't work out, you don't just stay the same shape your whole life, you get in worse shape. Right? Your muscles atrophy. Right? If you don't spend time working on a relationship, what happens to that relationship? It's not as powerful. It's not as strong. It's not as close. Right? You have to put energy into things or they decay. That's the natural state of everything around us. And it's also true with our relationship with God. Even Bible study, right? I could say, well, I read this book in the Bible, right? Maybe I studied Hosea super in depth 10 years ago, so I'm good. Because I have it all memorized. I remember exactly what I read, what I studied. No, we know that's not the case, right? If we don't go back and refresh it, remind ourselves, then we lose it. I think it's why God has us rehearse his holy days. Because if we don't, then we lose it. We lose its meaning, its reminders. And so the third thing we have to recognize with change is that it's never over. It's a constant process of changing, of growing. To even stay where you are takes work, which is a hard reality, but that is the reality of change. Now go with me as we think about this. Go over to 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 9. 2 Peter 1, verse 9. In 2 Peter 1 and verse 9. Now, I read this verse recently in a sermon, but we're going to kind of look at it from a slightly different perspective. Because here, Peter says, "For he who lacks these things is short-sighted, even to blindness, and has forgotten that he was cleansed from his old sins." So Peter's writing as somebody who would say they were cleansed from their sins. They'd been baptized. Jesus Christ's blood had washed them. But he said, and if you are where I'm talking, you've forgotten this. You're so short-sighted. You're not looking far enough in the future that you've forgotten what Jesus Christ did for you. Now, if we thought about that, we'd think that's a crazy statement. How could you ever forget what Jesus Christ did for you, what he paid for you? But Peter makes a pretty bold claim. That if you're not focused on the things he said right before this, then you've forgotten that you're cleansed from your old sins. You've forgotten what God had done. What does he say we're supposed to do? Go back to verse 5. He says, but also for this very reason, give all diligence. He says, really be focused on this. Give all diligence. Add to your faith virtue. And to virtue, add knowledge. To knowledge, add self-esteem, or self-control, I'm sorry. To self-control, add perseverance. Perseverance, godliness. To godliness, brotherly kindness. Brotherly kindness, love. So he keeps listening to all these things, and he only says add for the first two, but it kind of shows that what he's saying. He said this should add to this, then this should build to this. So this is a continual process. No, it's interesting, if we think about how many people said, you know, all we need is faith. Peter says kind of the opposite here. He says you start with faith, and then from your faith you should add this, and that should lead you to this next point. And then here it leads you to another point as you keep changing and growing. And Peter said, and if you're not doing this, if you're not adding to these things, if you're not changing and growing, you've forgotten what Christ did and that you've been cleansed from these old sins. It's a pretty bold statement to say you better keep growing and changing or you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing and you're going to forget what's been given to you. And he uses that phrase, you're short-sighted to blindness, which is kind of both those words actually almost mean the same thing. He said, you're so blind, you're going to be completely blind. That's kind of how that's phrased a little bit. Both of them mean you're going blind or can't see. And so Peter here reminds them, we won't read for this, but right after that, in verse 12, he says, and I've told you these things, I'm going to tell you again, I'm going to write it down so that you keep seeing this. Kind of reiterates the fact that you have to constantly be reminded to keep going. That change is something that we have to keep doing. No, it kind of reminds me, we won't go there for sake of time, but maybe put in your notes Luke 9:62. Notice Christ is talking about being a disciple of his. He uses that phrase, no one having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. No one having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. He says, if you put your hand here, you say you're in, and you look back, he says, then you're not moving forward. What's interesting, you know, a plowman putting his hand to the plow, even just not looking back, just standing still, really doesn't get a lot of work done. Right? The concept of putting your hand to a plow means what? You're moving forward. You're working. No one stands there holding a plow, standing still. So it's not even just about not looking back. It's the insinuation that you're going to move forward. You're going to put the work in. You're going to plow to produce things as God calls you to do. He says this change is a lifelong process, a sense of growth, of building, of keep going. Like he said in Peter, build this and add to it this and keep going. And that leads to the fourth and final point I want us to consider today. Kind of all of them build up to this reality, that change is difficult, but God will help. Change is difficult, but God will help. But as we think about what we've learned, it's slow, so that's difficult. It doesn't stop, and if we stop, it actually goes backwards. That's pretty difficult, right? And that we have to change our mindset from what we naturally think to make it happen. All those are difficult realities. And so this fourth and final point is that change is difficult. And if we don't go into facing change with that reality, we're going to get discouraged and we're going to quit because it's not as easy as we think it should be, or as easy as we want it to be, or as easy as some influencer on social media makes it look. Right? That's the world we live in of instant changes. Everything's going to be instant. Even these commercials of, well, give us 10 minutes and we'll come in and your whole bathroom's going to look different. Have you seen these, like, whole bathroom remodels? And they promise it's going to be like, in less than a day, your whole house can be different. Right? Everything is instant, fast. God says that's not the reality. That this is a slow, hard process. But at the same time, God says he's going to help us. Remember, think of the people we mentioned before, Moses. You know, God was with him through this process of changing. David. I'm just going to list a whole group of people I thought of amounts of change in their life through the Bible. It's pretty astounding. Right? Moses, Abraham, David, Paul, who opposed God, killed God's people, to become the one most prominent writer in the New Testament. Think of that change. But it wasn't overnight. It kind of seems overnight as you read his account, but it seems like for 3.5 years he disappears into the wilderness where God teaches him directly. And so these changes are slow and long and difficult. Or Peter and his denial and his lack of faith to being a pillar of God's church. Think of Jacob, a man who was in a lot of ways opposed God to a man who then followed God. Joseph and the things he went through, I think the humbling he needed before God brought him to where he was going to be. Or come to the New Testament with Jesus, Mary Magdalene is someone who's not often talked about, but her life was pretty transformed by God. Zacchaeus, this man that we told a little bit about climbing a tree and the conversion that takes place in his relationship with God. or the Bible is full of change, of people not being who they were before. But those stories are hard. Difficult things happen in their lives for those changes to take place. Moses had to spend 40 years in the wilderness being a shepherd for those things, for him to be ready where God brought him back to lead the people. And so change is difficult, but again, God will help. Go with me back to Numbers again. Numbers 13. Kind of end where we begin in a lot of ways. Numbers 13 and verse 26. So we're kind of backing up in the story before the people revolted and tried to go back to Egypt. Notice what we read here. So it says, "Now they departed and came back to Moses, these spies, and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Then they told them and said, 'We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit.'" So they say, God is true. It's as good as he said it was. So they're on kind of admitting what God said at first. But then they say, "Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the bank of the Jordan." So they give this good report, then they show the negative side. It says, "But then Caleb quieted the people." Imagine as they said this, all the people started chatting among themselves, you know, as people get concerned, upset. It says, Caleb says, "Guys, just listen, be quiet." And then he tells them, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we're well able to overcome it." He doesn't talk about what's there, who's there, he says, "But we can do this. Let's just go up at once." He accepted the reality that they can do it because God had told them that. Right? He remembered what God said, that "I'm going to drive them out. I'm going to deliver you. I'm going to do it." And out of the 12, only Joshua and Caleb come back and say, "We can do this." A little bit further down, we see one other section here, back to chapter 14 and verse 6. Chapter 14, 6. It says, "But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to the congregation." This is right after they rebelled and were going to leave. So it says they're so upset they tore their clothes and spoke to the children of the congregation of Israel, saying, "The land we passed through to spy out is exceedingly good. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us. A land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. And their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." And the congregation said to stone them with stones. So again, they're trying to tell the people, God said he's going to give this to us. He's going to do it. Just let's take this. Let's accept that it's not always going to be easy, but God's with us. And what's the people's response? To kill them. God intervenes and stops it all, but it reminds us of the difficulty, the fear that comes with change. And Joshua and Caleb are there saying, God said we can do this. God's going to deliver. And as much as we accept the reality that change is difficult, that's why we end with that point, but God will help. God's there to help us along this process as we keep going. I want to conclude in Philippians 1. In verse 6. Philippians 1, in verse 6. Anytime you need encouragement, I think this is a verse to go to. Paul says, "Being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ." Right, God has begun a good work in us. But it is a work. We're a work in progress. We're a work that he wants to change. But he uses these analogies of potter and clay and that he's shaping us, molding us. He says, and God is faithful. He's going to see it through. He's going to see us to the end. Paul says we should be confident of this thing. That, yeah, it's hard sometimes. It's not as fast as we want. We trip. We stumble. We don't overcome sins as fast as we want. But God is faithful to see us through. That the work he's begun in us, he'll see it through if we keep going. Just like with Israel, right? He led them to the promised land. He said, I brought you here. Just keep going. And they refused. It's not that God couldn't do it or that he gave up on them. They gave up on him in the process of change. They wanted to go back to Egypt. Because what's familiar, what's comfortable, is so much easier. But he says, I want to lead you here. Just trust me and follow along. And so Paul says here that he's confident that the work God has begun in us, the change, the conversion he's called us to, he'll see to the end. No, again, the Bible is a story of change. And it's not always pretty. It's not always how we want it to look. It's slow. It's hard. But God is faithful. He'll help us. He'll lead us where we're supposed to be. He won't give us more than we can handle because he's there to help us, to lead us out. We can't handle it on our own, but he's faithful to be there with us, to become this new creation when you trust him, put the work in, little by little, day by day, to commit to the change, commit to the process, to lock in mentally to where he's leading us, to keep going and let God lead us to the promised land.
We can go ahead and stand for one final hymn. Our last hymn today will be hymn number 132. Hymn number 132, How Good and How Pleasant. And after this hymn, we will have our closing prayer.